This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 878, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
You're a rich girl, and you're gone too far, cause you know it don't matter anyway. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man's money. It's a bitch, girl, but it's gone too far, cause you know it don't matter anyway. Say money, money won't get you too far, get you too far.
I'm Josh Flanagan, and here with me is my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Hi there. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week. This is episode 878.
It's a lot.
If we were comic books and we had started in 1938, it would be the mid-2000s. Is that right? Or is that too
early? Or, you know, we could have started in the 60s. Okay. Maybe 878 by now.
Yeah. Amazing Spider-Man's on 919, so... Right. Seems like they were
weekly for a while.
That's true.
They were weekly. They were three times a month for a while.
Yeah, that really...
They cheated.
You know what I'm going to tell you? Marvel doesn't respect numbers. That's what I know. Every week, one of us picks the book they like the best from their stack of comics, and how much the publisher or the book itself respects numbers is reflected in that, either, you know, subconsciously consciously.
It goes in the pot.
Sure.
There's a big old stew of things that we put in to decide the pick of the week, and the respect for numbers is a big one.
Respect for numbers
is the number one.
It's
in there.
It's there. We call that the pick of the week. A more subjective thing could not be. Is it the best book? Not necessarily.
Does it respect numbers? Yes.
Was it good? No, but it did respect numbers. So here we are. We are going to talk about that comic books, other books from the week, their relative number situation, the patron pick, where that could also come into play. I think this week it definitely comes into play. We will never answer listener email, but we will listen.
Sure.
We will listen to answerer mail. We will answer listening mail if we have time. Yeah, we're doing it like afternoon. We never do it in the afternoon. It's a different deal. There will be spoilers about the comic books.
Yep.
That's on you. Connor, you had the pick.
I did, and this week's pick was The Invincible Iron Man 656, which is also number 6, depending on how much you respect numbers. This is written by Jerry Duggan and drawn by Andrea DeVito. And, you know, look at the cover, Josh. It's
I gotta pull
old
up the cover.
Red and silver armored Iron Man with Wonder Man and classic Hawkeye.
The Silver Centurion? Is that what it's called?
I didn't even know he had a name. He mentioned in this issue the name of that armor. I didn't realize there was a name. But I'm not made of stone. This is harkening back to the 80s.
Yeah.
I loved this period at Marvel. I was a big Iron Man fan back then, Avengers, West Coast Avengers. And so here we have a flashback story where down and out Tony Stark is thinking back to a past adventure and doing a journal. And it involves his 80s era shoulder pad armored. Which I loved, you know, which is strange. But as a kid, I loved that armor.
Sure.
It's ridiculous, but I loved it. The color's great.
I remember that, seeing it for the first time, because I feel like it came out or had just come out around the time that I started reading comics. And I was familiar enough with the red and yellow, but like the silver came out and I had never seen a redesign like that. I was like, holy shit, that's awesome.
And, you know... What this comic does a very good job of is placing in that time and place. There's a part where Tony's flying around and we just see black-suited Spider-Man swinging by in the background or the foreground. And we have a brief appearance by classic Nick Fury, although he isn't. It just felt like, oh, cool, we're in this really fun and awesome period of time. And I'm reading Jerry Duggan's X-Men as well, and it's funny because he's been crossing that book over quite a bit with this one, which you wouldn't really think Iron Man and X-Men would crossover a lot, but you know, he's doing them both. And so here we have Magneto's involved in the story, and then we also have White Queen from that era.
Does this count as a crossover if are the X-Men books in the early time frame too?
No. I'm just saying these characters are popping up. Like Tony Stark has popped up in the X-Men book, and the X-Men have popped up several times in this book.
That seems to be natural. That happens, I think, relatively frequently. Because they're locked into those characters.
He's the one writing both. And we'll talk about another book that's also been doing that. But I liked his fight with the classic Spider-Man villains, Stiltman, Dr. Octopus, and Rhino. I really liked the almost full-page shot where Rhino hits him. And he says, I've been hit by a lot of people, but I've never been hit harder than when Rhino hit me. Like, it was just a really fun, classic Marvel adventure. And in a way that we often talk about the Batman books that take place out of continuity being super fun, this is in the same way because, you know, Marvel's done the same thing to Tony Stark that DC's done to Bruce Wayne, which is, oh no, billionaires are bad. Let's remove them from their companies and their fortunes and try to tell a story. And it's just dumb. These are comic books. They're not the real world. I'm happy to have my billionaire heroes with their gadgets and their toys and their jet planes. And that's part of the escapist fun of this.
And, you know, do a fun story once where they lose their money for 6 months, whatever, you know, not change it forever. But it has been like this for a while.
Yeah.
With Tony. He got his money back and then he spent it all.
The Andrea DeVito art, really nice action pages, some big splash page action, really captures that 80s feel. This is that Tony Stark where he had, in the comics at the time, he had like permed hair and the mustache. And he had the suit with the sleeves rolled up like Don Johnson. Like this is a
strong,
this felt like a book from that
strong
era.
Strong Hall and Oates vibes. That's what you've got going on there.
He is both Hall and Oates.
Yeah, he is. He's a combination of John and Daryl.
So, you know, I just had a really good time. Like, with every page turn, a new character would show up. And there's a lot of characters in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, ooh, Sandman. Ooh, Nick Fury.
Yeah, they happened to have the fight on top of the bar with no name. So those people were all there. And then I thought it was a really nice tool that they had, you know, Emma mind control them all. She didn't hire them or whatever. She's like, they're dumb. So it's easy. And it's bad Emma Frost. It's not, you know, current, you know, anti-hero Emma Frost. So that was fun. I will say that the conceit at the beginning, and it worked, so this doesn't matter, where he's like, well, I guess I'm a writer now. And I was like, really? You're doing this? You're going to do this memoir style? And I just, what I thought was, like, as soon as a character says, I'm a writer now, I was like, nope, you're the writer of this book now. But it worked. I sort of let go of it because it was a way to tell this story. And, you know, occasionally sort of like this use of captions in this way worked. It didn't feel like a crutch.
Right.
And it was delightful. It's funny because you made it pick of the week and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed a lot of my books this week. I don't know that what I was said if I had to choose one, but like I had to think about it. In fact, I didn't like until we started talking about it. And then like I remembered what it was. I was like, oh, I see why this is pick of the week. It's got all the gosh. It's a gosh pick. It's a good old fashioned. It's a good old superhero pick, which as the world burns, we are really leaning into.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, like if you're at home and you're not into this, you're like, why are they about this? And it's just like, dude, this is an antidepressant. This is
this is a joy machine.
Yeah.
It's funny because the cover is Iron Man, like I said, with Wonder Man and Hawkeye, and those guys appear in one panel in the book. Oh, no, I'm sorry, two panels each, one on each page. So I guess there's a third long shot of them, so three panels and three pages.
There's a great line there where he says, I was sparring against my fellow West Coast Avengers. Wonder Man was a pain in the ass to fight against or alongside, quite frankly. I was like, that's awesome.
God, I would love to have a throwback West Coast Avengers book like we've been having all these throwback Avengers books. This was a good week. There was a lot of strange books and there was a lot of fun books. There was a book I was really excited about. We're going to talk about that. Didn't quite do it for me in terms of pick of the week, but I finished my books on Wednesday. Mm. I didn't make my pick official until Thursday. I thought I had a little think about it. I had a sit. I thought about it. I slept on it. I woke up and I thought, I'm still thinking about Iron Man. You know, it's easy buttons to push. I'm not saying this is like groundbreaking comics work, but it's an easy button to push and they pushed it well.
Yeah. Then that's the thing. I mean, it's easy to say, like, here's what we're going to do, but you do have to do it well. And, you know, Cherry Duggan's probably grew
he's
up on
great.
His.
He's
like, probably.
I follow him wherever, whatever superhero book he runs. His X-Men book's super fun.
Yeah.
I'm still reading it. It's great.
But I'm also guessing like he grew up with these books. As his,
he's our age, a little bit older, maybe. Yeah,
but yeah. So either way, like his soft spot is going to be a little from there, and he did it, and it wasn't lame. It was awesome, and I think the art was exactly perfect for it. You know, it wasn't full on doing the style from back then.
No, but it was appropriate for that.
It was absolutely appropriate.
You know, someone like me who constantly complains about, you know, how characters have changed, how the movies have influenced the comics, and it's just nice to go back to a time when the comics were prime and Hawkman wore a costume and Dr. Octopus is in that green suit.
Can I tell you a moment that I had, which makes no sense in reality, but it happened. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading the book and he's talking to the general and Tony says, listen, I don't make weapons anymore. And he's like, whatever. I know about your commie stupid thing. Let's talk about what we can do. And then he's saying like they need to build something to basically fix the problem of Magneto and of telepaths. And at one point he says Muti. And I thought, oh my God, I felt like he was saying another word that he shouldn't have said as if it was real.
Right.
And then Tony didn't like say anything. And I was like, what the hell? Like, it would be as if somebody said a racial slur in real life was the thought I had reading it. Just for a second, like, I let it go. But yep. I was like, wow. Like, that was a loaded term back then. And because, you know, the way that things have changed since then, you know, I was like, oh, you can't say that. That's terrible. It's real.
I think you should start a campaign to cancel Marvel for using Mutie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. This character should never show up in a book again. He probably won't, so it's probably solved.
This is also a book you can just pick up if you haven't been reading Jared Duggan's Iron Man run so far and are curious. This is a great issue you can just read. It's all flashbacks.
Yeah.
Putting aside the dumb aspect of making him without his billions in his company, I do think the story they're telling overall, this story of the villain from X-Men taking over his company and using its resources for his own ends, has been a good one.
Yes.
And that's been sort of the overall crossover aspect of it, is that this guy, he started off in the X-Men book as their villain. So that's how they're sort of linked, these two books. And so I think that's been fun. The last issue was really fun, where we really dove deep into how he's taken over the company, and he basically bought it out, and how he's using the technology and the resources to fund his own, you know, sort of war against the X-Men. So I think that's been overall really fun. This was a nice sidestep, but still tying into that main story.
You know, we can bitch a little bit about him, like, being in this state where he's, you know, homeless or living in a warehouse or doesn't have any money or whatever it is. But the last two runs of this book, I mean, including Duggan's and then Cantwell's before it, you know, they've been really well written and interesting. You know, it's been a good era of an Iron Man that's a little different. Actually, Iron Man's been pretty good for a while.
It has been. And the same problem with Batman is that it's ultimately stupid. Like, they try to say, okay, well, he's not a billionaire anymore, so don't hate him, kids. But he's still going to be Iron Man, or he's still going to be Batman with all of his gadgets and toys, but somehow claim to have no money. It's like, well, how is any of this happening then? You know, you don't talk about where the gasoline from the Batmobile comes from, but still, it's just like, if you're telling me the whole conceit here is that they're both broke, but then they show up in other books and they're back to normal, like, it just doesn't make any sense. It's just dumb.
I mean, like, I get it. You live in the world that we live in, and there's different feelings about super rich people or whatever, but these are fictional characters, and you can have a good guy billionaire in this, because you can have them be anything you want.
It's a fictional world. They do good all the time. Bruce Wayne's constantly spending his money on social projects in Gotham City.
And then the story in that becomes, and they're constantly making up for their explaining their wealth and justifying it or whatever, like they did with Dick Grayson or whatever. But the thing that they always discover in that is, like, I can't seem to fix anything. I can't do enough.
Right, because it doesn't work that way.
Yes, it doesn't.
Life is complicated. Let Batman have his fucking mansion.
Him living in the big lonely mansion is actually a great metaphor that you don't really want to get rid of. Like, oh, he's got all this and it doesn't make him feel, it doesn't help, it doesn't change anything, and it's really sad that he's in that big mansion by himself.
Why is he by himself? Because Alfred's dead. All right.
So there were a lot of books that ended in nines this week that were the end or near enough to the end of things that have been going on for a while.
I do want to say that here at iFanboy Incorporated, we're big Daredevil people. We've been reading Daredevil, you know, as a group collectively for
decades.
The entire run of this endeavor we call iFanboy, and also through our childhood. Like, I've been reading Daredevil almost my whole comic reading life.
Yes.
Sometimes you get to the point with Daredevil where you're like, enough. Enough.
Well, I got good news for you.
It happened, you know, fairly recently where everyone, and it seemed like in the comic reading world, was like, okay, we've beaten on this guy enough. And then they brought in Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, and they made Daredevil really fun and light, and everybody loved it. And then they went right back. And, you know, I've been enjoying Chip Zdarsky's run. This is his 11th issue. This is at Daredevil 659 of this particular volume. He's done several volumes.
Yeah, he's been on for more than 11 issues.
Yeah, it's been one big story. We're getting towards the end. I think the next issue is the last part. And realizing this is also comics and you can fix and change anything. But when I turned the page and Daredevil stabbed his own eyeballs out, I was like, all right, somebody calls Chris Samnee and Mark Waid. We need a tone change stat.
All right.
Like, it was just like, okay, enough.
All right.
Enough.
All right. All right. You're not wrong. However, the beginning of this is, what's the cop? What's the cop?
Story.
What's his Cole? Name, yeah. Something like that.
Something like that.
He reluctantly went along to villain rehabilitation island.
Right.
He drank the Kool-Aid. He joined the fist cult, did whatever. And he had been uncomfortable with it the whole time. This guy has more ennui than anyone in comics right now.
Oh, for sure. He's conflicted
about everything. He resigns as a cop. And my favorite part about that first scene is that the other guy, maybe it's his captain or whatever, is just like,
Deputy Commissioner Marcus Banks?
Yeah. Well, he's like, well, hang on. We can do something. You at least keep your pension. He's like, no. And I was like, no, you should keep your pension.
I was like, buddy, keep that pension.
And if you put in,
first of all,
your 18
that
years.
New York City police pension is bulletproof.
Yeah.
You get that pension, you are not going to lose it.
And you can do all the things you
work
need
work a desk.
To. But I get it. It's about his principles and how he needs to be doing the right thing and he's not. And so that's why he joined Internal Affairs. Interesting. It's all great. You're like, all right, well, so he's real messed up. He goes home and you hit sulky Matt Murdock, who's been lying on the bed for at least a week. And he kicks him out. And I was like, all right, make him do the thing. You know, he's got his purpose. He's still fucked up because I think this is at the beginning of Chip Zdarsky's first chunk that he killed a guy.
That was his first arc. Yeah, he accidentally killed a guy, and that's how he met this cop. Right. He was investigated in. I mean, this has been one long story since Chip started however many years ago, however many volumes ago. And so we're doing the walk back through the neighborhood and remember everything from the run, including that ill-fated relationship with that mafia woman.
Yeah, right. I was like, oh, yeah. A bookstore crime lady.
Libris Books.
He goes to the Stromwinds?
Stromwinds.
There you go. And falls on the ground and says, I give up. I'm yours if you let the people. And I was like, no.
Well, Elektra got arrested. And he said, if you pull the strings and get Elektra out and everybody who was arrested from the island, then I will become your.
He just says Elektra.
Right. In the beginning, it's Elektra. I'll become your puppet.
And then it turns. Did he get his eye stabbed out at some point? Did I forget that?
He does it here.
In the beginning, one of his eyes is bright red, like it had been before that. Like, he's got a red eye.
I don't know.
Like C-3PO, who has a red arm. And you're probably wondering how it happened. Well,
I got a comic for you.
James Robinson and Tony Harris, no. Wow, that was I think Ron made that the pick of the week. That's how long ago that was.
That was a long time ago.
You know, and then the big turn is, you know, he cuts his own eye out, which shocks them. Because they think we've got him, which I was like, how stupid are you people? And then I guess he cuts the man's eye out also and then puts his own weird red fake eyeball in
there. There's a lot of
eye
cutting. Yeah, look, one of the eyeballs is red. I don't know why it is. I don't know what's going on there.
The point being that all that stuff is weird or whatever, but I will say for the first time in quite a while, I was surprised about what happened in a superhero comic book. Because I thought, he can't kill these guys. And I was like, I didn't think that he would maim somebody's eyes. I thought, for a guy who's so worn out about accidentally killing somebody at some point, you know,
right?
He's done worse. You know, theoretically, there would have been all things that were collateral damage for him. But he cut that dude's eyes out. And listen, he deserved it.
He cut it out and then stuffed another eye in there. I mean, this is
that he didn't
beyond,
even like,
you know,
boil it.
Accidentally killing a dude by hitting him too hard. This was like, I'm going to cut your eye out and take my eye that I already cut out and stick it into your eye socket. Which is way worse.
It also way makes worse. His sacrifice much because they don't know that he's fucking blind. It's like, it doesn't even That's matter true. That I do it.
I just got to the end and I was like, okay, we need a.
I know.
We need a tone shift.
I'm saying it's been a lot. Going out, light that boat on fire. Do it. I do love the idea. Like, I've complained about this. I'm sure we have, is that like you make some change and then they're stuck with it for a really long time. But I really do like, and this happens in Daredevil a lot, absolutely screwing the next guy.
Oh, sure. Bendis and his run with Daredevil in prison. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was Bendis put him in prison and ended his run.
Like, good luck, Ed. Brubaker. Good luck.
That's great. It's one of my, it's a great move.
I like this book. And whenever I see it, I'm like, oh, cool, Daredevil. And, you know, this is Rafael de la Torre on art. He fits in very well with the overall look and feel of this book's had with Marco Cicchetto before. But it's just a lot. There's just only so much of ultra dour Matt Murdock I can take before I need a reset.
Well, I mean, that's...
I love Matt Murdock as a character.
But that's what he is. Oh my God, like his famous story, his you know, seminal stories are he's on the edge of killing himself and asking God why. That's him. That's what it is.
Yeah, but that's... You can't do that like indefinitely and ongoing. I mean, you got to mix it up.
It's been going on since at least 82.
No, but not all the time. I mean, there's plenty of fun Daredevil stories in there. These are the ones you think about.
Amazing Spider-Man number 919, speaking about being near the end of a thing.
Or issue 25.
Yeah. What do you think?
It's an oversized issue. I've really enjoyed Zeb Wells' run on this book. I liked the mystery of the time jump and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. This particular arc has been bad. They're basically dimension Z-ing Mary Jane here. This was the Rick Remender Captain America story where they sent him to another dimension and he lived a long time.
Yeah.
You know, time doesn't matter. And when does this book take place? Yada, yada, yada. But now Mary Jane's 4 years older than Peter Parker is. And at least we know that those aren't her biological kids. So that becomes much easier to get rid of later.
That was a good explanation for the weird things that have been going on. I completely and 1000% do not understand the bad guy. I don't know what his deal is.
he was a previous bad guy from another arc of Spider-Man's in the past. I don't remember that story. I don't care about him at all. I think his,
but
the whole thing with him is kind of dumb.
You know, but in terms of character drama, kill your babies, whatever, that's pretty rough. Like, he went back, and they've been playing this out for a while. In the first issue, everybody hated him, and then she had the kid, and you're like, what the hell's going on here? And they made us wait for it, and it's a good explanation. Yeah. And I think, again, I mean, I don't know if Zeb Wells is going to keep going after, what's the next one, 920, or whenever this arc ends, but he's screwing somebody over. You know, what's interesting is, so I finished that whole thing, and you know, she sends Peter back against his wishes, because he's never going to leave her.
Yeah, they're both stuck in a dimension. Only one of them can escape. He's going to send her back, but she, you know, presses the button before he does, sends him back. So now she's stuck in this other dimension. She meets this guy. They rescue these two kids. They create a little family unit.
Years
they're
pass.
Living together for 4 years. Mary Jane and this guy fall in love. By the way, it's Peter, Paul, and Mary is the group.
Yeah.
The three of them. He meets Paul. They fall in love. She's got a whole Laura Croft thing going on in this other dimension.
She got buff. There was like one, I was like, whoa, it's the apocalypse.
Well, this is Kara Andrews drawing. Right. Kara Andrews drew that excellent, amazing fantasy book last year or the year before, whenever that happened. And he does in a lot of different styles. I didn't love the style he chose for this, but it was fun.
Yeah.
It felt very kind of 90s-esque.
So all that happens and it's uncomfortable because then he comes back and she has to tell him like, no, a lot of time has passed and I'm not going to be with you again. And again, I think that's fine. That's a great dramatic beat. They'll work it out.
Well, it is because for him, it's only been an instant. For her, it's been 4 years. So he's like, give me a kiss. She's like, nope, I have a boyfriend.
Oh, man.
And we've got surrogate kids. And he's like, what?
That's a long distance college story that has happened to many of us.
There are aspects of this I like. What I didn't like, I think, is I don't care about the villain or the whole plot of that story.
But whatever. The nice thing, though, is that after you finish that, which is a bummer, you come over here and you go, all right, he's able to date Felicia now.
Well, hold on. Before we get to that backup, I did want to say I did like the last bit where he had stolen tech from the Fantastic Four. They confront him and they have a conflict. And then Captain America shows up because they had a conflict. And he's like, Peter's clearly in a lot of pain. We're going to let him deal with this instead of having the cliche where we all hate each other. Mm-hmm. He's like, he's hurting. You can see it. Let's just let him deal with that. I thought that was good.
Yeah.
Now, the backup I thought was terrific.
It ends super bummer. And right. And so you go into this, you're like, oh, he does still have a hot girlfriend. He's got that going for him. You know, like they have never been able to have it, but they're close. And by the way, the Black Cat Mary Jane stuff, which Jed MacKay is doing, is this the same Mary Jane? Is that Jane who's 4 years later, who's living with this other person who has the kids?
When is now?
I'm going to assume that it is, though, because that makes it make more sense.
Yeah, because she's okay with Black Cat and him dating, and that's the whole point of that
story.
This is a Rainbow Rowell written backup, by the way.
She's awesome.
And Alvaro Lopez. And it's Peter Parker and Felicia Hardy going to a wedding in Omaha, Nebraska. And of course, some tomfoolery happens that causes Peter to have to suit up and stop crying, but he's got to do it in Omaha. So there was one funny bit where he's swinging along and all of a sudden he's just out of space.
Yeah.
And he's just sort of hanging there.
Wait,
he's
so like, we were on the highway? Shit. What happened? How'd we? Yeah. We just left the city.
Yeah, that was really very good. Funny.
What was funny? I don't know if it's a complaint, but I thought it was funny, is the first page has them in the airport. And I was like, who is that squat old lady that Peter Parker is with?
I thought it was Aunt May.
Yeah, I did too. And I was like, Aunt May's looking kind of hot. But then I was like, oh no, Black Cat's looking kind of haggard. But it's just because like her proportions are off. She looks like a normal person. Like she's a little, squat, relatively speaking. Yeah. Like it's just rounded. It doesn't look like her in my mind. It's totally fine. It's not bad art. It just took me a second.
You try flying on a plane these days. You'll go from hot to squat in a moment. I thought it was fun. I thought it was a nice little cute backup that played mostly with Peter being a fish out of water, having to foil the crime while running through cornfields and traveling on highways. It reminded me of that story from the 80s where he had to go out into like the suburbs. I remember he had to like end up like on the train, like on top of the Long Island Railroad to get home. Like I just recalled that story in my head.
He was in Mattapan.
So, you know, Spider-Man, it is what it is. There's some things that here I don't like. There are things I do like. But overall, I've been enjoying
it. It's a good time.
Yeah. Phantom Road, number three. Jeff Lemire, Gabriel Hernandez, Walta.
Yeah. The reason I brought it up is that I remember I get the first issue and I was like, all right, there wasn't a lot there. It was very first acty. And I'd I'd forgotten about it to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. This third issue kind of gets away from those people.
Goes back to the real world.
It goes back to the real world. So whatever the Phantom truck drive, in the other one, I think that they were given a task that they have to do in this semi-truck and it's whatever. But then this issue is like a police procedural where we meet this woman, Special Agent Weaver, and there's the two local cops and the head guy, the sheriff, whatever he is. Like, it looks like a sheriff. You know, he's dismissive and doesn't want to do the work, and they take over and whatever. But the sort of deputy guy starts working on it. He shows up with her and he's done good police work. And I liked that. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, he was good. He was a good character. I liked him a lot.
You know, she calls, she's talking to some, I don't know, somebody at FBI headquarters, and there's an odd sort of conversation where he's like, are you all right? And she's like, yeah, I'm doing the thing. And she does the police work, and then we find out that she has somehow been involved with this other world at some point when she was a kid. There's a bit here where she is back in her hotel room, and she's got no pants on, and she's getting in the shower. I don't know that it played like a sexy thing, but it was interesting to see this character who was very buttoned down and stiff, like on her own, thinking about stuff. It gave her like that vulnerability, and I just thought it was drawn really well, and it was kind of surprising. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it's the same person. And she gets in the shower, and she's nude. Again, it's not like a sexy thing. It's just it's a thing that would happen. And I thought it was an interesting choice to do it that way. And she's having the flashback, and she remembers it. And I just thought, you got a lot of character out using a combination of words and pictures in a short amount of time that added a dimension to this book that hooked me in a lot more than what has come before. The mystery of this other world that is going on isn't all that interesting to me. Like, what the people do with it, the people around it, is something that's just interesting. And I thought that they introduced a compelling character here.
Oh, for sure. I think two characters. I think the deputy is a good character, too. I read the first two. We talked about the first one, I think, at least. And as I said, we talked about the first issue. Like, I was mostly reading it for Gabriel Hernandez Walta, but I obviously like Jeff Lemire a lot. But with this issue, I was like, oh, okay, now I'm interested.
It really was a step up, and I was very pleased about it.
And there's all kinds of mysteries out here in the real world. I mean, it ends with her getting abducted by somebody in a ski mask. Mm-hmm. So, you know, who is this person? What is her connection to this other world, we'll just call it? There's a lot going on here. And if this was the primary driver, I'd probably be way more interested than the two random people that sucked into this other dimension, don't know what they're doing.
It's a testament, of course, to Jeff Lemire, who's, you know, he's a veteran by now. And he tells all sorts of different types of stories. So it's not like I necessarily like everything, but every once in a while, he'll do one, you know, that really jives with what I like. And you can sort of see he doesn't do too much ever. And he almost does too little at times, but it turns out to be the right choice after a while. I just like when I can read some of his stuff that I connect with a lot, because I like that work a lot.
Yeah, I was happy about this issue.
Good.
I was happy.
That's awesome. Yeah.
We're now going to enter the unofficial Geoff Johns corner and talk about two Geoff Johns books this week. First, Stargirl, The Lost Children, number 6, the final issue of this really fun miniseries that takes threads from Geoff Johns' run on Justice Society many years ago, takes threads from his Stargirl television show, which I liked a lot, but I just don't like it when it comes into the comics, but takes threads from that, and takes threads from what he's doing currently with Justice Society over in his own little bespoke corner of the DC universe, and weaves them all together in this tale that brings back like 45 Golden Age sidekicks into the current DC universe. It was really fun. The Todd Nowak art really felt vintage in a great way. You know, he was someone who was big in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it was fun to have, you know, modern characters interacting with these Golden Age throwbacks like Quiz Kid or Johnny Rocket, things like, you know, that are kind of silly in that way, but are also kind of fun. It brought back the Hour Man character, the robot from Geoff Johns' Justice Society run. There's a nice little flashback to that run itself. And in the end, all these characters are back, including Jay Garrick's daughter, who he had been mind wiped to forget. So now she's back. And we had an announcement this past week, I think, that they're doing a Jay Garrick book and she's going to be in it. So it'll be
cool.
Whatever this weird island he's on, he's having fun telling these stories that involve most of the Justice Society. And I'm happy about it because I love those characters.
Junkyard Joe, number 6. This is the last of the Junkyard Joe miniseries that's been going on, which you and I have really enjoyed a great deal. Yep. I didn't love the ending.
I feel like it went fast. And I was trying to figure out why I find so many of these miniseries unsatisfying sometimes. I think it's because of the lowered page count. And in some cases, the only 5 issues. I mean, this was 6 issues, so it doesn't have that excuse. But I feel like a lot of these miniseries take a slow burn approach for most of it. And then they have to, oh my God, we got to end this quickly. And this felt like it ended very quickly.
Yes, it did. And it was like, happy ending. I'm like, well, did we earn that? Did we earn that happy ending? I don't think we did. Now, these are all components of a larger world that he's building. This obviously does not take place. It takes place in some world related to what we saw in the Radioactive Man, whatever that's called, world with the casinos and the Geiger. Weirdos. Yeah. And at the end, Geiger makes an appearance, but it's not the same time because
No, he comes through a portal. And
yeah, Junkyard Joe's clearly in our timeline. They're pulling it all together, but I don't know. I think I wanted a better wrap up to this rather than just like the ramp to whatever the next thing is. The whole thing is taking a long time.
Here's what I did like. Junkyard Joe's casual wear.
Oh, yeah.
They got that robot in an Aloha shirt. He's grilling burgers. He's out of uniform. It's weekend, Junkyard Joe.
I like that character a lot.
He's going to have some grass to mow. He's got to clean out the gutters. Mm-hmm. He's fully in that suburban dad mold.
And he's satisfied by it. You know what I mean? Like, he's not completely like, oh, I got to take care of this. He's like, I'm taking care of it. I'm doing the right thing. For whatever reason, is the design of that character is fantastic. He's a robot, and I don't know what it is, but he kind of looks kind. He kind of looks supportive. Like, there's whatever sort of design magic that they do is really good. But it is such a leap from, like, these killers, who I think are Hellboy characters, are trying to trap him down, and they're in the middle of town, and they're surrounded, and the whole town is like, we'll stop you. And then you cut to it's the summer, and everybody's happy. Which is nice, but it did not feel earned.
The structure was a little off, which is surprising for someone of Jeff Johns's caliber and experience, but it just felt like it ended really abruptly. Mm-hmm. But I liked it. I mean, I thought the characters were good. I thought the family's characters were interesting. I thought, obviously, the Gary Frank art was terrific. He did a lot of action in this issue.
Yeah.
I'd love to stay in this world. I don't need to go back into this whole shared universe that he's trying to create with these characters. But, you know, I enjoyed Geiger.
Yeah.
And I enjoy Junkyard Joe, so who's to say I won't enjoy more of this? I just really liked this little thing he built up, and I would have been happy to stay in it.
There's another one in the middle that was like, I thought, or maybe it was just a special.
It was a couple of one-shots.
Yeah, that's probably it.
But he's got several books ready to come out, so who knows what's going
on.
Hey,
as long as they're coming out, is Gary Frank going to draw them all?
No.
Crazy.
No.
Good, because we'd never get there. Now, Captain Marvel number 183... It's not a 9, but as they have titled, it's 49.
So well, it's kind of a 9 because it's 49 in the other numbering, so it's also kind of a 9.
And this is the second to last issue of Kelly Thompson's pretty long, prodigious run.
50 issues is nothing to sneeze at these days.
No, certainly not. It's like I enjoy it, but I don't know that it's sticking with me all that much.
This has been the least fun of the storylines. This one also has been crossing over with the X-Men. This one more directly, so here she's been fighting the Brood alongside a team of X-Men, and then in the X-Men book, they've been also fighting the Brood, and they keep referencing or crossing over with things that happen here. So this has been like a full-on crossover without it actually being a crossover with the X-Men comic.
I like all the characters hanging out together. I think that that's kind of cool. I don't actually read these characters in many things, and it's kind of fun, but I don't know that it was all that satisfying.
It also came down to being a throwback about her and Rogue. You know, Rogue got her powers by stealing them from her originally, you know, back in... Avengers Annual.
See, I didn't
number,
know that.
Yeah, that's how Rogue got all of her strength and flying ability. She was just somebody who had the ability to steal, you know, life force from people. But then she touched Captain Marvel and something happened and she got the powers permanently. And so they're constantly linked in that way. Mm-hmm. This was her sacrificing herself, not to die, but for pain, to save Captain Marvel because she still feels guilty. And I like that bit. I just... You know, it's been a lot of fighting the Brood for the last four or five issues. So it's been like, okay, it's been somewhat repetitive. I like it. I just didn't love this arc like I've loved other arcs.
Yeah, kind of didn't deliver on the relationships of the people that we had been hanging out with the most, I guess, which was, you know, Spider-Woman was sort of relegated to one of the crew. Binary had her own.
Way too much Gambit.
At least in this, like, other than the ridiculous, like, accent they have to write him with, which is comedic. Like, he was, you know, he was a nice guy. He was capable. Like, it wasn't, I wanted to like him. It wasn't bad. I wish this wasn't the last arc. I feel like it needs a different
thing. Well, I mean, it isn't. The wrap-up issue is going to be different. I mean, the story's over now. So the final issue will be probably her back with her regular characters.
Yeah, but that's a wrap-up issue, not a wrap-up arc. And I think that you want to go
I get that thing. I agree with you. It's a little strange choice to end it this way, but you know, if I was recommending this book, I wouldn't start with this arc. There's plenty of other arcs I would have started with saying to check out before this one.
Yep.
Not that it's bad, but it just wasn't as good. Hey, those are the books we wanted to talk about. But at patreon.com/ifanboy, the patrons, every single one of those beautiful sons of bitches gets to vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, in a squeaker, the winner was Green Lantern number one from Dawn of DC's new line of books. Written by Jeremy Adams with art by Zermanico, Romulo Foriardo Jr. on colors, and Dave Sharp on letters. And there's a backup story we'll get to in a minute. We've been talking a lot since someone asked us in an email and we really dug into it. DC has been publishing fewer and fewer books. And we really sat back and thought about it. There was a ton of characters that weren't being published. And this was one of them. Like, there was no Green Lantern book for a long time, which is strange.
It is.
But here we are. So,
well, that Grant Morrison one was something.
Yeah, but that was a while ago.
Yeah. And then there was a Green Lantern series, but Hal wasn't in it. I don't know where he was.
It got canceled. No, but it got canceled. Yeah. It's been a while since there's been a Green Lantern comic at all from starring anybody. And most of the mid-tier is gone. Like, Green Arrow's back with Dawn of DC, but that's only a miniseries. Like, characters like that, there's no Hawkman book, there's no Aquaman ongoing. Like, it's just been strange at DC. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was excited because I love Green Lantern, I love Hal Jordan, so he's back, and he's back on Earth. And I was sort of surprised at how much this felt like a tonic, because I don't know the last time Hal's just been like, I'm Green Lantern and I'm on Earth. You know, he was back for a little bit at the beginning of the New 52 in 2011, but they very quickly sent him off to space. He's basically been like off on his own space adventures for like a decade. And so just to have him back on Earth was really great for me. I really like this. It felt like it was lacking something to make it really great, like pick of the week worthy, but I really liked this. This is from Jeremy Adams, who was previously the Flash writer and now has moved over to Green Lantern.
I enjoyed it, but it felt excessively throwbacky in a way that, I don't know, it just felt like it was from out of nowhere. I don't know that that's a problem, but he's in the flight jacket. Mm-hmm. He's acting exactly like, you know, he did. I don't know. We haven't seen him like this in a comic in 15 years. Every once in a while, he'll come back for something like that. And I was like, so is he old now? Like, is he like a middle-aged, like, is he like Pete Maverick? You know what I mean? Like, he kind of was. So they like aged him up in a way. And, you know, he goes to fly with the guys and they're like, oh, hey, old timer. And I was like,
it's the problem with time in comics. It's the problem with trying to age characters. It never ends up making sense. You just got to keep them in their stasis bubbles.
Right.
I get what they're doing here. Like, he's the guy that's come back from a long time in space. He joins Ferris Air again as a test pilot. Everybody he's testing with is a young kid. They're not even using planes. They're using drones.
That's the thing that I'm getting tired of is it's the Captain America joke. And Captain America can get away with it. You pulled him out of the ice. He'd been in there since World War II. It's funny. Like, don't do that with Hal Jordan. Like, he doesn't need to be a fish out of water on Earth. I mean, I guess he's been gone for a while or whatever, but it ages him and it puts him out of step. And like, I want him to be cool. And I feel like there's a line. Because you don't like the thing. I was rubbed. I enjoyed this, by the way. I'm not complaining. But there's a bit where they're talking about the drones and no one flies anymore. And then it was like, oh, he just sounds like an old person now. I don't want that to be the character, what it's about. That's the thing that I agree with you.
I didn't have that thought, but I agree. I think it was in the back of my mind while reading it. It's fine to have him come back from space and Carol's got a boyfriend. And like, that's all normal stuff, right? But have him come back and all the technology is different. Like, that's just like, okay, what is the story you're telling here then?
Right. It's like coming back in a members only jacket and getting in a...
Or showing up in his varsity jacket.
Right. Or like, and driving up in a Trans Am being like, I'm cool. Like it's Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused.
It's like George Costanza in Seinfeld.
Exactly. When he gets the muscle car. And
to be fair, the ladies loved it.
That was the joke, is that she was totally into it, which wouldn't happen. Whereas this, Carol is correct and be like, where have you been, dude? You know? And that's the part that stuck with me as I was reading, as I kept thinking about that stuff.
Is he sober?
I don't know. Are you conflating, or is that
when he's drinking on the?
Oh, he says, yeah.
On the trailer, he says he's drinking a soda.
Yes, and I noticed and I was that.
Like, what?
And I thought that was odd. And then also, it also stuck to me that he like flung the bottle out to sea, and I was like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, I was like, "Wait a minute,
we haven't done that in a long time." We're all over the place.
Oh, you know what? I think I totally forgot that he was an alcoholic in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole Emerald Dawn thing and everything.
You could leave that behind.
I forgot about that. It's been so long.
Uh-huh.
So long.
I did like he's driving around in the old pickup truck and he doesn't have his powers apparently. And some guy ends up, is it Manhunter armor? Yeah, Manhunter armor. And like he just goes in. You know, because he has that was the part I like, because they hit on the no fear thing, you know, or the willpower thing.
Yep.
Like he said it, he's like, you're not going to find someone with more willpower than me. And I was like, well, you threw the bottle into the ocean. Like, does he have like a lot of unopened cookie packages? in his cabinets, or, you know, like, I only have one. Anyway, but I'm joking, but I liked that he just went in there. And I'm going to say it's almost a little bit of a letdown that he didn't get a chance to beat the villain without the power before getting it back. Because I thought that's what they were going to show us. No, this guy is indomitable. He does not need the ring for this. But he didn't get a chance to do that.
I didn't think he never had the ring. I just think he didn't use it.
Okay, well, that's a question to be answered. Maybe we find out more in the next issue. But I thought that, because this was a 1 month earlier, which means that when he went to Carol's, he had the ring again.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I got the sense like he got back and it wasn't. Is this the one where they cut to space? That's in the second story, but I think it's.
That's the second story.
I think it's contemporary to it, though. Is that some shit's going down?
The Guardians are gone again. Oh, it's taken over by the United Planets, United Federation of Planets, whatever it is. That's why he bails, goes back to Earth. So who knows what the situation is with the rings and everything. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was overall fun. I really liked the Zermonico art a lot. I thought it was really appropriate. It had a nice, clean style. I liked his howl. It looks like he's in the classic Silver Age costume with the no green shoulder pads, mm-hmm. which is cool. I liked in the bar, there was like a painting of him in the back.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. Sinestro's drinking at the bar, apparently. Sinestro can hold his liquor.
Oh, sure. I mean, Earth stuff doesn't even touch him. It's almost like just a habit.
I'm happy to get Hal back and interacting with the world and not be off on his own bubble. You know, we had so many years of the Sinestro Core War and then variations of it, which, by the way, Sinestro Core War was awesome. But then we had like diminishing returns variations on that story for like 15 years. Mm-hmm. And so I'm happy to tell a new and interesting and, you know, hopefully fun, different Green Lantern story. I don't know if this is a miniseries. They don't tell you usually till the second issue anymore. But the DC universe is lesser when the other characters other than Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman don't have books. Mm-hmm. And so I'm happy to be reading other characters. Let's talk about the backup.
There is a problem here.
What's the problem?
They're calling this guy Guy Gardner.
Well, it's a different dimension. So this, the backup story.
Is it a different dimension?
Yeah, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson.
Great writer.
Which was a fun surprise.
Great art.
And art by Montos, who is terrific.
Hermanico y Montos.
John is now back for the same reason Hal is, so he's helping his mom build a shack.
I loved seeing John show up and not be weighed down upon, and just like, I was like, okay, let's see who this character actually is that isn't completely defined by his guilt.
Right. And he's helping his mom build a shack. That's great. Page 32 in your digital reader says another universe, another time.
You're right.
We see Guy Gardner, who's old.
That's
and
fair.
Has gray hair and a beard, who is trying to stay alive.
Because Guy Gardner of the whatever we call the normal universe, he never has that haircut. He never has has that beard. Ever.
Never.
He's a man, we know a man like this, who will never change his haircut. Ever.
He'll go down swinging with that haircut.
He is 100% convinced in his soul that that is the haircut and everybody else is wrong.
Well, to be fair, he's had two different. I mean, he had the severe bowl cut in the 80s, and then he switched up to just sort of like a buzz cut.
Yeah.
But he's had that for a while.
Well,
I think you're right. He doesn't have the samurai long hair look.
The bowl cut, they just, for purposes of the market, they just updated what would have been the equivalent haircut for the era that he was living in.
Right, because when he first appeared, he didn't have the bowl cut as a character. And they just picked, what's the most dickish haircut we could pick? And that was when they went with. Mm-hmm. And they were right.
Yeah.
And my best friend in growing up had that haircut for a while, so I'm not being an asshole, but it was a dickish haircut.
Sure.
He could have that hair. He still has great hair. You know, I don't know what to make of this backup. Like you said, you know, it starts off with a short, sweet bit of John Stewart returning to home, seeing his mom, and then we cut to another dimension, another time where Guy and this new, you know, basically pro-B Green Lantern are trying to survive an attack, and we just don't know what's going on back here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we got a big meaty comic here.
I enjoyed it. I really did.
Yeah. I mean, I was really thinking when the week started, oh, Green Lantern's probably going to be the pick. You know, you just look at your pull list, you think, well, you know, what am I really excited for? What's got a good chance here? But I read it, and I was like, that was good. It was like a solid, and I'll jump on the segment. This is like a solid 4-star comic for me. And so it wasn't quite a 5. Or, you know, even at the end of the day, I didn't really consider it in the pick of the week running. It just was like, I really enjoyed it, but it wasn't like great.
I'm going to go with 3.75. That's how I feel about it.
All right. And I'm sticking with it, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks for voting, patrons. You can vote. You can be a patron for as little as $1 a month. That'll give you voting privileges. And it's great. You help support the show. Those are our primary supporters at patreon.com/iFanboy. They help directly support the show. They unlock great shows for everyone to enjoy. They become part of a great community. And we have actually movement on our not revamped stretch goals, but we're adding some new things to our Patreon rewards, and it just took a long time for design stuff to happen, and we're actually getting movement on that, so that should hopefully be sorted out pretty soon. And actually, we talked about a t-shirt this week, didn't we?
Yeah.
We need to get on that, too.
It was one I said and thought of a long time ago, and then...
We're having movement now on those things, so check that out. And speaking of t-shirts, ifanboy.threadless.com is where you'll be able to get that new t-shirt eventually. And I think I thought of another variation on that one. We should talk about that after the show.
Also, I should mention that after my recent bout of diverticulitis, I'm also experiencing movement again. So it's pretty good.
No one needed to know that. Ifanboy.threadless.com is where you can buy the t-shirts. We got 12 designs. Hopefully by the end of the summer, we'll have 13 or maybe even 14 designs you'll be able to choose from. And that's great. Ifanboy.com/support. It's our digital PayPal tip jar. Ifanboy.com/Amazon is where you can find links to our Booksplode books, as well as a general shopping link. And bookshop.org is who we've partnered with to support local bookstores. You can find those links on the website. So support local bookshops. Support us in the various ways. And that's how the show keeps going. That's how you keep getting, I don't know, 6 to 8 shows a month.
It's a lot of shows.
Through your support. It's a lot of shows.
The mail never stops.
And the mail doesn't stop, and neither do the patron powers, which is what we give out to people who are supporters of us at the $5 or higher level at patreon.com/ifanboy. Josh.
Marcus Leonard, with 2 first names, that's not his power.
Nope.
Must answer all questions honestly.
Oh. So his power is he can't lie, but so it's almost like a curse.
Well, it depends. When a question is directed at him.
That was a Jim Carrey movie.
He had to tell the truth always, but Marcus only has to do it when he is addressed directly with the question. You see?
I see. If someone walked in the room and was like, hey, who spilled this on my couch? He doesn't have to answer
Steve.
That because they didn't directly say Marcus.
Oh, right. Okay. I see what you're saying. You're right. Okay. That works. Yeah. I'll go with that. That's a nice wrinkle. So it's not everything.
Marcus, did you spill this? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. I was thinking of it more in terms of, let's say, personal relationships.
Sure.
When somebody asks a question, should I do this? No. Not, you know, if you think it's right for you or whatever, does this look good? No. No, that doesn't. It doesn't look good. Or you're in the meeting. Like, well, why didn't this get done? She left early and didn't complete her work.
Uh-oh.
Like, there's lots of problems that can happen. But there is power in it. You are the source of truth.
Marcus is the unwilling and unwitting source of truth.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
There you go. So thanks for being a patron, Marcus. Patreon.com/ifanboy. Any patron at the $5 higher level gets a superpower live on the show. We thank you very much. Josh, we have time for one email. Which one do you want to do?
I hadn't read them ahead of time, so.
That's fine. I'm putting you on the spot. One or two. A or B? Camera A, camera B.
Luke.
Luke S. Josh has mentioned frequently that the name iFanboy rankles him because it's such a played out pun. It's tied to Apple, what have you. Is there any reason you don't just make it I, comma, fanboy, a la Asimov's iRobot? It's still a played out pun, but it feels possibly a bit more classic, and so many old Silver Age Marvel comics had issue titles that use the same conceit. This change wouldn't affect the website's URL or the social tags, since punctuation and spacing don't play into those things. Worst case scenario, you enlist the fans to redo your artwork, and you're practically good to go. I've been thinking about this for a while now, but it resurfaced while listening to Josh's great talks with Ryan North. I'm sure I'm not the first person to suggest this, but thought I'd write in just in case, in the off chance I am.
All right.
Good news, Luke.
Yeah.
It is.
It is.
It's already there.
Yeah.
It's built in.
Yeah, that was definitely a thought at the beginning because we thought we were fancy. We were like, oh, Claudius, you know, whatever.
Not to go into the whole history again, but we wanted to be fanboy.com.
Yeah.
But fanboy.com was taken. Why we wanted to go with fanboy is a whole other story. Just for the purposes of this, originally the idea was to be fanboy.com. That was taken. So we said, okay, what do we do here? We have the email still. I mean,
yeah.
I think we're on archive of them all, where it was like, you know, in the year 2000, in the first tech bubble, there was a lot of URLs and companies called
E,
like E things, like E Trade or E Harmony. Mm-hmm. And so we thought, well, what about E Fanboy? And then we thought, what about I Fanboy? And then I remember specifically there's an email that says, I Fanboy is probably better because it plays into the tech nomenclature, but also it's like I, comma, fanboy.
Declarative.
Like that's literally a line in an email we wrote back in 2000. So it's already built into the system.
So the problem here is the fanboy.
It's the root problem.
Yeah, the root problem is the fanboy, which at the time, back then, made a lot of sense. A, we pretty much all considered ourselves boys. And B, still do. And then B, it was like a term that you would use to make fun of somebody like us. And we thought, oh, it's funny, we'll do it like that.
Well, we were reclaiming it, remember? Because we took that goddamn course in college senior year about reclaiming subculture slurs. Yeah. And fanboy was a sort of a slur against people who like comics. So we thought we'd reclaim it because we were 22.
Right.
And we just graduated from college, and that's the kind of stuff you think when you're 22. And so that's where we're at.
So the first time that that ever occurred to me that that wasn't a great idea was from one of our favorite writers, Greg Rucka, who kind of looked at it and went, ugh.
He said, "Ifen boy." He did. And we went, oh, shit.
He did. And then, you know, as time goes on and people start to, like, I felt, it was a couple of things. The thing I don't like about it is I think it's relatively exclusive. It indicates that what we do here is for boys. I don't know. It's just too small. It segregates without meaning
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was never our intention, obviously, but it was just, at the time, we were just trying to reclaim a slur against comic readers and not really thinking it all the way through in terms of inclusivity.
And it, but then that by turn makes us look like we were like, we don't want any girls here. And that's not
it
at
all.
Yeah,
and also I think it also brands us as a type of fan that we definitely are not.
Right, yeah.
And so at a certain point, we just, what can we do? This is it. This is what our name is. We can't do anything about it. But I can guarantee you over the years, we have had people dismiss us or not listen or not watch because of the name, which, you know, it is what it is at this point.
And now that we are perhaps not as well known as we used to be because of all sorts of reasons, I think it can be a liability on, like, for a while we were a known quantity, so it was never a problem. But as sort of new generations of creators have come in, we don't do our video show anymore, things like that. I think
when we were a full-blown operation doing a daily website with 10 articles a day and we were credentialed members of the comics media, it was different. It didn't matter, really.
We knew everybody who ran publicity for all the companies and things like that. Like, it didn't matter. Like, we were, it's silly, but now there's a little
further
away.
The name didn't matter because they knew who we were.
Right. And the work we did.
Yeah. I will say, I don't remember why we didn't do it. We were going to rebrand everything. I think it was the acquisition, didn't it? Is that why we didn't rebrand?
I don't remember. I know that we were going to start
another
thing.
But I've got a file on my computer that has the entire rebranding name, the art, the mock-up. Like, I've got it. We were going to rebrand. And then I think it was the acquisition by Graphically. We were like, oh, shit, we can't rebrand now. Or something to that effect. But
yeah.
And then someone ended up using it anyway. So it's not usable anymore.
Oh, yeah. It was the magazine.
We were going to do a magazine and a website and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
Ended up not happening. But we've been under that shadow for a long time.
And it just is.
A long time.
But I mean, like, at the same time, like, when I bring it up, like, I'm not complaining. I just feel like I need to acknowledge the fact that, yes, I get it. I know what's wrong with it. But here we are.
Yeah, and the things that I like about it. Like, listen, I'm proud of what we've done, and I'm proud of the name. I love the iconography. I love the font. I love the Fantastic Four illusion. And we've had creators be like, oh, Fantastic Four. And, you know, so it's like there's part of that old school fandom that I really like. But I, you know, going back, if I could go back in time, I'd tell my 22-year-old self a lot of things, including don't name it iFanboy. And here's a list of companies to invest in. Do it right now.
Yeah.
Open up an IRA. I think we should do this first email also because it sort of ties into what we just said.
Go for
Carl
it.
Carl C. says, I know you guys don't cover sales, but I was listening to a YouTube channel discussion about how few DC Comics are in the top 100. 58% of their titles don't rank. Does the editorial team installed under AT&T need a regime change under the tight-fisted David Zaslav? So it's hard to totally answer this not knowing, A, who these people are and what they said. But I don't think they know what they're talking about because DC hasn't released any sales information since they left Diamond. No one knows what DC sales are.
That would be why they're not in the top 100.
Are these guys involved in the industry? Do they know people? Do they know the business? Do they have an understanding of the fact that no one has any sales information? It's all just estimates based on a formula that Diamond puts out? Or do they know that DC hasn't released any sales data since 2020? Are they just people reacting to things they read on the internet? Like, I don't know who these people are. I'm not saying they're anything. I don't know them. But we have a fairly good understanding of the industry and fairly plugged in, at least we were at one point. But no one knows DC sales. They don't put them out. I mean, there's people who spend all their time just analyzing sales estimates, by the way. They've never been the real sales data. And they don't have DC because DC stopped doing it. So, by the way, also Penguin Random House distributors, they also don't release sales data. They're starting to distribute more and more books, including Marvel stuff. So, eventually, all the sales data is going to go away.
Yeah.
You know, Random House doesn't tell you how many books a certain book sells. They just tell you it's a bestseller. Mm-hmm. No one ever talks about that in publish. And comics is the same. They just had this formula that Diamond put out as an index that people, you know, extrapolated sales estimates from. And we know people from the companies who will tell you the sales numbers were wrong by a good margin because they're just estimates based on a formula. So I don't know what these guys are talking about. Again, they may be right, they may be wrong, but if not knowing who they are, what they said, it's hard to react to that other than it's perplexing because, again, DC hasn't put out any information. Now, that doesn't mean that just, you know, looking at what DC is publishing, they're not, like we just talked about with Green Lantern, they're not putting out a lot of books. I think they put out 200 fewer books last year than they put out 5 years ago.
Like total?
Total. I'm looking at a chart. They put out 989 periodicals in 2017, and they put out 710 last year.
So as part of a larger demanding corporate parent, I assume that, I mean, I'm sure they've always been responsible for revenue to a certain extent, but I get the feeling, given sort of the cost-cutting measures that have taken place, I want to call it Warner Brothers because I don't want to call it what it is. You know, they're responsible for things. And so you look at what you've got, and you've got a bunch of Superman books, you've got a bunch of Batman books, and they're not making those unless those are the ones people are buying.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, it's important that people sometimes just think of DC and Marvel as just the publisher, but DC Entertainment is an entire company. Marvel Entertainment, at least it was before they got sucked into Disney a couple weeks ago, was an entire company. I used to work with DC Entertainment at my old job on that Batman app, and, you know, the publishing team made all the final decisions, but there's entire buildings on the Warner Brothers lot full of people working for DC Entertainment that have nothing to do with publishing. They have to do with consumer products, and they have to do with brand management and all this other stuff. And they're making all the revenue there, and that's part of the same company. And the publishing division probably has its own P&L, but DC Entertainment as a whole is an entire organization with tons and tons of VPs and senior VPs. And, you know, there's a whole company around DC publishing that people who read comics don't often think about as existing, but it's true.
Yep.
I know from those meetings, and I think my NDAs are over, that, you know, there are seven characters that are their most revenue generating characters at DC, and you can imagine those are characters that are getting books. It's Batman, Superman, Joker, Harley Quinn. I mean, those are four of the seven. I think
so what Wonder I'm hearing Woman. Is that this Green Lantern thing is Ryan Reynolds' fault.
It's just that there's a whole corporate thing they've got to service, and so it probably affects the books that come out.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But there's been a Joker book for years. Why is that? Because he sells a lot of fucking t-shirts.
Starting with me in 1989.
Yeah, exactly. I think I owned one Joker shirt in 89.
I had a lot of Joker shirts, and I don't know exactly why, because I wasn't like a huge...
You should talk to your new therapist about that.
Yeah. Hey, before we get started, I'm just going to bring something up.
I had a lot of Joker t-shirts when I was in junior high school. Yeah. So, does the editorial team need a rechange? I mean, look, I think so, but nothing to do with sales. I just think it's gotten stale at DC.
I suspect that...
Anytime you do that, I think of Richard Dreyfuss.
That I think you wouldn't know the difference. Anyway, no, I suspect, though, that if you are a person working in DC Comics or whatever, you know exactly what kind of comics you want to do. And you know exactly what comics you can do. And you have to work in between there some way. You know, and at this point, anybody who is, you know, sort of working their quote-unquote dream job as a comic book editor, they worked really hard to get there and had a bunch of luck and did a bunch of things right. They're doing their damnedest, and they got to, you're trying to hold on too. It's very volatile at a place like that when you think about all the people who they've gotten rid of over the past 10 years or something like that. Like, it's not so easy to fix because of that corporate structure, because you've got directives that are coming down from all sorts of places, and you keep getting new management, things keep changing.
And all things being equal, we would love a robust, balanced line of comics from every publisher. But I can see how someone would say, these Batman books are selling, sell 10 more Batman books. Now, I don't think that's good for the long-term health of it, but I can see how that conversation happens.
This is all about quarterly revenue. That's
right. It's all about hitting quarters. So I can see why they say things like that, like Harley Quinn book, Joker book, 10 Batman books. Long-term readers don't like it, but we're not generating a quarterly revenue for them.
As a consumer, you know, I feel like I the way that I look at it is that if a book comes through, it's really good or really interesting or really unexpected. Like, that's why I'm here. I'm waiting for those things to leak through. And then I feel lucky to have them. And the rest of it's the work that they have to do as a business, you know, trying to put units out.
The ultimate question is, does a new team need to be installed? I mean, I don't know. I think so, but there's a relatively new team anyway. The editor in chief is new, relatively.
Are you sure? Wasn't that 10 years ago?
No. She came in like...
Right. You're right.
I think there's market forces at work. I think there's corporate forces at work. I think we're just living in a different world than we lived in 20 years ago, 15 years ago.
Is their primary goal, if you had to like look at the, you know, case for the business, is their primary goal to sell the most comic books possible? Or is that supposed to align with the branding of those characters? We don't know.
I don't know. I think the publishing team probably, you know, their goal is to sell comic books because that's how they generate revenue. But overall, DC Entertainment's goal is... you know, transmedia flywheel.
There you go.
I've seen those flywheels. I've seen the DC flywheels. Mm-hmm. So at least I did. But It's tough. I mean, we're not living in Paul Levitz's world anymore, where he was able to insulate DC from Warner Brothers and make their entire thing just about publishing great comics as long as they were profitable as a company. Then once he left, the mothership sucked them into the tractor beam and everything changed. You can point back to that moment. That's the most important moment in modern DC history, is Paul Levitz retiring or whatever he did.
Yeah.
After that, everything went different. And it's a bummer.
Yeah.
DC still makes a profit. And like I said, when I was doing the Batman app at my job, they were the final arbiter in everything. The publishing team.
Yeah. That's cool.
It was the publishing brand team.
Awesome.
It wasn't like the global brand team. It was a publishing brand team who was like, nope, yes, no, yes, no. It's tough. These companies we think of as small little publishers, but they're actually cogs in giant corporate wheels.
They have been to a certain extent for a long time. But what that means changes a lot as we go global and the value of the properties with the movies and whatever.
Right. Especially now that Zaslav has said, he's the new CEO of Warner Brothers, in case anyone is not constantly paying attention to this garbage, that they look at DC as one of the most important parts of Warner Brothers. So that puts them under a giant microscope.
Yep.
Which they weren't in for a long time.
Basically, like, they were making fun comic books, you know, but now they're Lando running Cloud City, you know, started off, you know.
Got supply problems of all kinds.
Jim Lee is up there like, oh, you got no idea, but I've just made a deal. And no, who knows?
It's tough, man. But we're not in that golden age anymore of independence from Marvel and DC and being able to do interesting and take risks, because they are now.
But it still happens.
It still happens. It's just not, you know, Vertigo doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. But Black Label does, and they put out really interesting books.
Connor, did you know that you have to edit this show?
I do.
Okay.
Contact@iFanboy.com. Thanks for writing in, Carl and Luke. Those were good questions. Good questions. Also, you can write in for our Media Explode show if you write in and put Media Explode in the subject line. And let's talk about other shows, speaking of Media Explode. 2 weeks ago, we had Josh's interview with Marvel editor Jordan White.
And I tried to ask him about that a little bit, but he said, no, it's fine.
Next question.
I don't know that he was deflecting, but I did ask.
And suddenly the line went dead. Right behind this show in the feed, this past week, we had the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 review that Josh and our buddy Paul Montgomery did. I still haven't seen it yet because I was out of town for the weekend it came out. I don't know when I'm going to see it. I'm running out of days here.
Are you excited to see it? Because you didn't
like
it.
No, I don't like the Guardians of the Galaxy
movies. Okay, so it's like a, I must do this, not I want to do this.
I'm very excited for Fast X next week. That's why I'm like, I'm running out of time to see Guardians of the Galaxy. So there's that, which is basically a superhero movie anyway.
I saw the trailer for Marvels and I was like, I'm into that because it's niche.
Sure.
I like that Captain Marvel.
And then next week, this coming week, we're going to have our Booksplode review of The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, a novel, which Josh and I already recorded. So it's done. So I know you'll get it. Look forward to that next week. That was a fun one.
It's true. You can find our library over 1,300 shows. You just did the text. Nice work. 1,300 shows and counting over at ifanboy.com. We should check. We're not at 14.
No, we're at 13. I looked at the Apple podcast number yesterday, and it was 13 something.
Over at ifanboy.com, wherever podcasts are sold. You can follow us at ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, and sometimes the best of the week in panels. Today, I put something weird on there just because.
You did. I liked it.
Don't expect it all the time, but it happened. I was here. You can follow Connor and I on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and at J.A. Flanagan.
And finally, consider leaving a review or a star rating. Oh, I skipped a part, but I'll get back to it. Consider leaving a review or a star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts, wherever podcasts are sold. And also, subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. That's where you can find all of our old video shows. We were once YouTubers before that was a thing.
It didn't exist. If we'd known.
We were just some random dudes on YouTube as well at one point.
Yep.
If we had only known. But you can find all those old shows. There's nearly 200 of them. And also, this show goes up there every week as well. So subscribe there. Consider doing that. People listen to the show there a lot. So thank you.
It turned out to be successful on YouTube. You had to do the voice where you're talking about things like this all the time. And we hadn't done that.
We never told anybody to like or subscribe either.
Not
which
one
I think
time.
Probably was our downfall. Because people don't know. They don't know to like and subscribe unless right. You tell them.
Yeah, constantly.
How would they know? How would they know?
I don't know.
Hey, I know you want to watch this video about how to fix this thing in your house, but first, here's 10 minutes on how you should like and subscribe to the show. Oh my God.
I'm never coming back to this. Just show me how to fix the light switch. So the next time I need to fix something, I am going to search the general topic. I am not going to think, that guy who showed me how to do a light bulb, maybe he knows something about this sink. I'm not going to do it. And also, I'm not going to go, I like what you do with that light bulb. I'm going to watch 4 times a week for the other shit you do for fun. It's not going to happen.
Here's how to change your Prius battery. I'm not doing that.
Then I sign back on, and they've given me 500 light bulb options. It was like, dude, I finished the light bulb.
How many broken light bulbs have you got in this house?
I get Sorry. I'm sorry. But my supermarket gives coupons out, right? And every once in a while, they think, hey, you still want baby stuff. And I was like, my kids are 9 and 13. I bought baby stuff once. You're correct. But it was a long, and I don't know how to tell it. I don't want baby stuff.
Right.
Please stop. Don't give me coupons for it. Give me coupons for old man stuff.
That's like the time in college. Might as well just keep going. This is like the time in college where I got a call. Junior year of college, we got, you know, like a call from a telemarketer. I was going to say spam call for a second there. And they went through their whole spiel about kids' books. And then I couldn't get them. Like, I couldn't get in a word at edgewise. And they were like, so how many kids do you have in your household? And I was like, I'm 20.
You were polite enough to listen all the way through, though, and not hang up on him.
I was like, then I was kind of curious. And then
you tried to treat the man with respect.
What I literally said was, unless you know something I don't know, I've got zero kids here. I'm 20 years old. They were like, I was like, thanks.
And unless you also know something I don't know, I don't plan on entering your market for quite some time at the least.
Hey, now, we went long, but this is like our own therapy session.
Oh, yeah.
So sometimes we go long. For us, for you, for anyone, really. Hey, Josh, this was fun.
It was super fun, obviously. We would have stopped earlier.
You want to come back next week?
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Absolutely. Right. Actually, no, yeah, definitely next week. Sorry, I was like, I have plans on Saturday. No, that's fine.
Well, then we'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Bye.